Looks like it's going to be the hottest year on record globally.
Days, that were 30 degrees or hotter.
And that will only escalate in the coming years if we do not tackle climate change.
You're listening to the Climate Council podcast.
Welcome to the Climate Council podcast. I'm Alexia Boland. Australia's greenhouse gas pollution levels have jumped yet again, with the latest batch of government data confirming the nation's emissions have been on the rise for three consecutive years. The 1.5% jump in greenhouse gas pollution levels over the last year to December 2017 comes after the federal government failed to introduce any funding measures to tackle intensifying climate change in the 2018 budget. Australia is one of the most vulnerable countries to climate change in the developed world, with worsening extreme weather events including heat waves, supercharged storms, heavy rainfall, flooding, droughts and bushfires. Today's episode, we speak to Climate Council Acting CEO Dr. Martin Rice on why Australia's overall greenhouse gas pollution levels are showing no sign of slowing down and what that means for tackling climate change. Australia has just confirmed our emissions or greenhouse gas pollution levels, rather, have been rising consistently for 3 years. What's going on? What does that mean?
So that means it's effectively bad news for the climate and, more importantly, Australians who are very much on the front line of climate change. So, what does it mean emissions are continuing to rise? Well, emissions from the burning of coal, oil and gas, they release greenhouse gases and they trap heat in the atmosphere. And through that, we see an increase in temperature. And in Australia, we've already seen a 1 degree Celsius increase. And, a lot of people in the street will say, what does that matter? What's 1 degree from a daily weather perspective? Well, it's really quite significant because over, especially in the past decade or so, that we've seen a marked increase in heat waves. They're lasting longer. They're becoming more frequent and more intense. Heat waves are also what we call a silent killer, so they have huge health implications, particularly the vulnerable, the young and the old, and also outdoor workers. So just have a spare thought for the construction worker when you're passing the street or when you're thinking about the food produce and where that comes from with the farmers out there in the fields. So as I say, it's really frontline stuff. So emissions may sound quite innocuous, but they do have deadly and severe impacts on Australians from all walks of life, whether you're a farmer or whether you're working for the tourism sector or whether you're an emergency service worker. Bushfires are becoming more dangerous bushfire weather in southeast Australia. So this issue really cuts across all walks of life in Australia.
So for listeners who may not be aware or across the science, what you're saying is that the burning of coal, oil and gas, fossil fuels, directly contributes to making climate change worse.
That's right. Yeah, they're the number one culprit. So if you like movies and you're looking at, say, Murder on the Orient Express, then, that would be the number one culprit I'd be looking for. And it can have deadly intent. But the solutions are, this is an exciting time as well here in Australia and elsewhere in the world, that we have the solutions to tackle this huge problem. And climate change is humanity's greatest challenge, and it's an intergenerational one. So it may have been caused by looking at our parents' generation and our generations, but it's our kids and grandchildren going into the future that they'll be deeply affected by climate change as well. But we do have the solutions. When you look up in the sky, thankfully, obviously I come from Scotland and it's pretty dreary, as we say. It can be wet and cold, and there's not much sunshine. I remember actually being a student at the University of Aberdeen and getting caught in a heat trap from the sun in February, and I was looking up going, that's what that thing's for. It's actually supposed to warm us up. So I guess my point is that Australia is one of the sunniest, is also one of the windiest countries on the planet. So we have this enormous natural renewable energy source. And it's exciting times when you look at the, despite the federal government, you know, their lack of action on what we're talking about, emission figures there. But when you look at subnational level, and what I mean by subnational is states and territories and local councils, a lot of them are really embracing climate solutions. So renewable energy, battery storage, they're investing in public transport. So there's huge opportunities, and many of these places are moving forward. And it's exciting to work for the Climate Council, because we also talk about the problem and the huge challenge and the risks of climate change, but there's no point just talking about the problem unless we present and discuss the solutions that are here. So we have this fantastic program called the Cities Power Partnership, and so that's really looking at this subnational level and bringing together local councils and big cities, small towns right across Australia. I think we've got over 75 councils involved now, representing over 8 million Australians. And that really gives opportunities for these councils and communities to work on the uptake of renewable energy, so solar systems and council buildings, swimming pools, schools, your homes, transport solution, energy efficiency. And so, yeah, it's an exciting time for in the solution space, and they really are here. It's just really, it's the political will that lacks at the federal level.
I think it's really important that we do present those solutions that are available, and you know, the electricity sector in Australia has the greatest opportunity to slash greenhouse gas pollution across our country. I want to bring you back just to the data that's been released that's confirmed the third year of rising pollution levels. Can you tell me a bit about the process of monitoring greenhouse gas pollution across Australia and how we know that this data is so significant?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's actually quite a complex one, so I'll try my best to unpack it.
That would be great.
So Australia is obliged, we have an international commitments with the United Nations, and they have a reporting system. So our listeners may remember that there was the Paris climate discussions and conference that went on December 2015, and that was really significant, because that produced a target for us to limit the temperature rise that's linked into the emission reduction, the emission increases that we're seeing. So through that framework of the United Nations, the Australian government and all governments, countries, to what they call the parties, although it's not much of a party, to be honest, it's a deadly serious issue, but there's 197 countries signed up, including Australia, and they're obliged to send in, I guess it's like reports, or if you're in school or university, then it's your homework, and you've got to prove to this United Nations body that you're actually reporting effectively on your emission reduction tracking. So, Lex, you asked, how do they do that? So, in Australia and everywhere else, they look at the big sectors. So you mentioned electricity, and in Australia that's one of our largest big greenhouse gas polluters. And we also look at things like stationary energy, and that's pretty much a fancy word for talking about the release of greenhouse gases from extraction of oil and gas, or the transportation of fossil fuels and so forth. We also look at other big polluters like the agricultural sector and the transport sector. And we have government agencies that collect emissions data, and they've got databases, and then that feeds into the what we call the National Greenhouse Gas Inventory. And that's run by the federal government Department of the Environment and Energy. So that's part of their international commitment. And I should add that Australia does have one of the best methodologies for reporting emissions in the world. That's not to say that it's not without the need for drastic improvements. Sadly, The release of this greenhouse gas information, and like you were talking about, emissions continued to go up in the last reporting, and that's right. But last year we had a case where we have quarterly updates, and these quarterly updates are really important. And so the Climate Council, we look out and we keep track of that, because when we want to try and see if a climate policy has been effective, the true test is if emissions are going up and down. So we need to monitor how emissions are tracking. So sadly, the quarterly reporting was 6 months late.
And why is there such delays in the reporting of data? Is it because it takes so long to collate the data, or is it another issue that's external altogether?
Well, I mean, this is conjecture, but I think it's largely politically driven. And although the department will have that information ready, the government may see fit as to when to release that. Let's face it, it's hardly been rosy reading for the government. So not only has it been late in coming out, they've released this emissions data on Christmas Eve. They've released it on a late Friday night, and frankly, I just think this is an effort to really put this information under the radar, so that outfits like the Climate Council, that in many ways are like the guard dog, watchdog, keeping an eye out for how we're tracking on emissions. But you know, that's one of the things I'm really proud about the Climate Council, and we've got the media team and the research team, and they're constantly having a look at this. So we even on Christmas Eve, we picked up that the data was released, and then we issued a media release, and we got out in the media and talked about the challenges with the reporting and really the ramifications of emissions continuing to rise.
And obviously, so this data always comes out, and we can expect to see, hopefully, it'd be wonderful to see a decrease in greenhouse gas pollution levels, but the fact that it's gone 3 years now of increments that are going up and up, what does that say about Australia, especially in a global context, for what we're doing as part of the Paris Agreement?
Yeah, well, it's a good question, and it's a bit of a layer cake one. So I hope there's probably a few listeners that have got sweet teeth like myself. So I'm just looking ahead at that. So when you look at going into Paris, countries, and I was talking about that 2 degree target, and that target's been set by the science, and climate scientists have said that look, this is the bare minimum threshold that we can't go beyond, or we really will see abrupt changes to our extreme weather and ultimately our livelihoods. Now, Australia's emission reduction target was 26 to 28% reduction by 2030 based on 2005 levels. I mean, that sounds a bit fanciful in these numbers, but effectively what that means is every country, when I mentioned earlier about there's 197 parties to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is effectively what came out of the Paris talks as well. If every country was to adopt Australia's woefully inadequate target, we would see a temperature rise of between 3 to 4 degrees. And there's really quite remarkable climate scientist in Germany called John Schellnhuber. And he was asked, what's the difference between 2 degrees Celsius and 4 degrees Celsius? And he was very clear and succinct. And he said two words, and they were human civilization. That's really what we're talking about, and how important it is to reduce our emissions. And yeah, Lex, going back to your question about, you know, well, what does that mean? Australia is one of the most industrialized and rich countries on the planet, has a responsibility and has the means at its disposal to greatly reduce its emissions. And as I say, the solutions are here with renewables and energy efficiency, transportation and so forth. But we are global laggards when it comes to tackling climate change.
And what about our global reputation as becoming cemented, I suppose, as, you know, year after year we're seeing emissions rise? What are the countries, especially that are taking on new leadership in climate? I suppose, is it an embarrassing situation for Australia when we have so much potential being, you know, the sunniest and one of the windiest?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to, I mean, I love sports. If you want to look at the sport and analogies, and I know it's rich coming from a Scot because we're generally rubbish at sport. But when you look at that remarkable rivalry between Australia and New Zealand, when you cross over the Tasman Sea and the Wallabies and the All Blacks, it's not really been a great run for the Wallabies recently. And it's not really a great run on the climate track as well. Well, we've got a Prime Minister in New Zealand that really is quite inspirational. And she really wants strong climate action and is putting forward really serious policies that will lead to effective climate action. Mm. Now, when we look back in Australia, that leadership is failing. But as I said, it's not just up to the federal government. We all have a responsibility, and I think at the subnational level there really is some movement there. And when you look at the, you know, the, I guess the core of this interview, talking about the emissions data. So the electricity sector emissions have been going down a bit, and I think you could argue largely that's been down to the uptake of renewable energy in this country as well, and then also been a slight dip in the demand for electricity.
And are you expecting renewables, the boom that's underway in Australia, as the prices fall, especially with lithium batteries, do you think that's just going to continue to get stronger and stronger, which is also a great thing for climate change?
Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, I think at the household level and so on, it's, you know, it's the price will continue to go down and there'll be more people. I mean, we're lucky enough, we've been in the position to build our own home. And we've got the solar system and we've been waiting on the battery storage price to come down probably next year to buy that system, and then we can be sufficient. And then I think what's important as well is to be able to export the unused electricity in our home back into the grid, because so that you can actually allow that, because you don't want people in that aren't in the position to have renewables just now not to be able to tap into cheap electricity. So I think we all have a part to play here. But when you look at the federal government's got a new plan called the National Energy Guarantee,
and that's a climate and energy policy in Australia, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That's a climate and energy proposed policy, and there's two components to that: reliability, which really isn't an issue in Australia. Australia's electricity system is one of the most reliable on the planet, so that's almost like a red herring. But the emissions one, so they've really set a target that's woefully inadequate, and it's 26% to 28% reduction. Of course, that's aligned with the Paris commitment, which isn't backed in science, and it's not what's required. But the electricity sector is our biggest greenhouse gas polluter, and yet it has the most solutions available. So what does that mean if we have low electricity sector emission reductions? Then other sectors have to do the heavy lifting. So that means agriculture and transport, for example. They don't have the solutions that are as readily available, so it's a bit of a challenge there.
And so I suppose looking at the year ahead, knowing that we've got this huge potential and there's the possibility of a policy that might actually stifle renewable energy and battery storage in Australia, is there hope that we can actually slash these rising greenhouse gas pollution levels, and hopefully, you know, the next year of emissions data will be a little bit brighter for Australia?
Yeah, well, that's a very challenging question to answer, to be honest. It really depends on how, in a large part, the National Energy Guarantee plays out. So there have been some states, for example, Victoria and Queensland and territories with the ACT, that have a lot more progressive renewable energy targets, and they want that emission reduction target to be much higher. So if we can increase the climate ambition with our climate and energy policies, then we have a much better chance at decreasing our emissions. When you look back at previous policies, so we used to have what was called the carbon pricing mechanism. So basically that was a price on carbon. And we saw a reduction in our emissions then. We had a new government come in. They repealed the carbon price, and since then we've seen an increase in emissions. So I reckon in the way forward, it's putting a price on carbon. It's really having much more stronger emission reduction targets for the big polluters like the electricity sector, and really transitioning to the solutions such as renewable energy and battery storage, which are much more cost competitive than new coal or gas plants.
That's the latest from the Climate Council podcast team. You can access all of the latest Climate Council reports, fact sheets and podcasts at climatecouncil.org.au. You can also follow us at Climate Council on Twitter and /Climate Council on Facebook. Don't forget, the Climate Council is independent and community funded. We rely on community donations to fund our critical research, campaigns and projects. So please help support us with our work and donate via our website today. Okay.